In this episode of Your Rivers Are Wrong, we're going to talk about the difference between, and maybe the combination of, world building and storytelling.
And for the prompt, we're going to talk about a place where story doesn't usually happen. Something a little calmer than we're used to. All this and more on this episode. Stick around.
Yeah. Good morning, everyone. Or afternoon, or evening, or night. You know the drill by now. Welcome back to Your Rivers Are Wrong, the podcast. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Merle.
And I'm the other host, and my name is Dante.
Yeah. And in this podcast, we talk about the wonderful whimsies of world building, the arts and aesthetics of setting up a setting, and telling stories born from it. Ah, I'm very excited about this one, because I have a lot of thoughts. Like, let's not jump into it right away, but I'm very... Like, my notes have never been this big, I think, which is maybe sign or a bad sign. I'm not sure. Maybe it's going to mean that I have to, like, literally skip half of them because we don't have, like, 2 hours to talk.
You know what? You know how we always alternate being sick and you were sick last episode and now I'm sick?
The absolute truth, yes.
If you could save me from talking, like, 70% of the time, I might actually really appreciate that. So
makes sense. Sure. I'll just totally
I'll do
brain
my best,
dump on
though.
You. Yeah.
No, I mean, listen, it's fine. I'm sure this is going to go well and I'm going to contribute just like any co-host would.
Amazing. That's all we ask here, you know? It's a friendly conversation that we're having. No pressure. Anyway, let's back up like just a little bit before my excitement overtakes me fully. How are you doing? How's this week been for you?
I'm sick.
Yeah, I figured out that much. Yeah, there.
Nah, but I'm doing okay. It just kicked in yesterday. Yesterday Aww. Being this nebulous term of whenever this episode comes out. But I mean, there's a couple really cool things happening for me. And I'll do a touch of on it very briefly because this has very little to do with the podcast.
You know, that's allowed in the first 5 minutes. You know, that's a point.
This is true. I'm going to have eye surgery next week.
Oh, whoa.
So what I'm going to, it's an operation called Smile, kind of like LASIK, but a little bit newer and a little bit safer. And they just like carve something out of my eyes and my eyes are 20/20 again.
That's wild to me. Oh,
you know, what a time to be alive.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That's very like futuristic. I don't know. Whenever someone tells me that this is a thing that you can do in this real world, I'm always a little bit like, oh, yeah, that is really a real thing. Kind of exciting. Is it any like medical reason as well, or just because you're like, I'm done, I'm ready for this?
Yeah, I'm done with glasses. I'm just in the age range of getting the surgery and it should be good for around, I don't know, they tell me 20 years, but I'll ballpark it somewhere around there. And by the time 20 years passes, they'll probably have like bionic eyes.
Cooler
and
stuff
I'll just
anyway,
get that
yeah.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I'll get like Falcon zoom in eyes. This is my prediction for the future.
Uh-huh, sure.
It's the only invention that I really want to happen in my lifetime. Bionic Falcon eyes that like just zoom
what
in.
What does that even mean? Is it like a hyper zoom in Google Lens
like,
your eyes?
Like,
is that a thing?
Vision better than 20/20. That's what I'm hoping for in the future.
Wow. Okay.
And then you don't have to just wear binoculars all the time. There's like an active zoom in, zoom out process.
I love how go ahead.
Sorry, I'm going to be like 70 years old and just have these incredible eyes.
And see everything in the world. Yes. I like this prospect. Yeah.
As someone who's been blind almost their entire life with glasses and stuff, you know, that's my dream. That's my dream. I don't ask for too much, but bionic eyes.
I only want zoom in eyes. That's all I need, world. Yeah.
If I only get one, that's fine. I'll just get one. If I can only afford one, just one eye closed, I'm zooming in.
God, that sounds like a terrible idea. But, you know, I'm supporting, you know, you know, why not?
But for now, I'll do what the technology
the
of the present
version.
Offers me.
Yeah, sure.
And, yeah,
how humble
my eyes,
of you.
So.
Yes. I love how the only sort of connotation I have with like zoom in, see everything vision is like when you, because I'm also a glasses, like I'm also half blind basically. The only connotation that I have with like see everything extreme zoom in vision is like when your glasses are just, when you have new glasses and you have to get used to the like sharpness of it and you're like, oh my God, I'm like getting dizzy from how sharp the world actually is instead of my own bad like usual eyesight. Yes. Which sounds terrible to have all the time, but you know, I guess in the future, you know, why not? Yeah. I like it.
I keep remembering that gif. It was a gif now, but it's from the Spy Kids movie where the main boy character hit something on the side of his face and like 5 screens appear in front of his eyes.
Yeah.
Like zooming in.
Bastion get me faster. That spy gadget shit. I love it. It's the best part of that. Spy movies ever. Yeah.
It's so extra and I
give
love
me
it.
That laser lipstick right now.
But yeah, that's it for me.
Amazing. Exciting.
Yeah. How about you?
I am not sick anymore, as we do usually.
Wow,
we totally like switch each other out, as you said, as it should be.
Take turns.
Yeah, I've been sick for a while, but now I'm, except for my voice is still only a little bit nasally, but for the rest, everything's basically back to normal, which is good. And I've been very productive. Yeah, I had a good couple of days. Very busy as well, because the festival that I work at is kind of coming up in a month and a half. So now we have sort of the bulk of the organization is like inviting everyone and making sure we have money to pay them and like knowing what our programming is about important. And stuff, because otherwise you can't invite people to the thing if you don't know yet what
it
you're
is important.
Doing. So yes, there's a lot of deadlines happening, but it's also the thing that I love most about festival work is that it's really going like in bulk. Like you're very busy and then you're very relaxed and you're very busy, and because it's just very event based, that it also means that you're really doing it together. Like everyone is working hard at the same time, and it's really like, you know, you're really getting into like team spirit vibes, and that's really good. So that's been happening basically all week, and I'm sort of scrambling to get by. So yeah, I slept in a little bit this morning because I felt like I deserved it, but yeah good stuff overall. Yeah,
I think it's really cool when everybody just kind of locks in toward the same goal. Like everybody's moving almost at the same pace.
Yeah, you're really like you're super like alert and connected to everyone because everyone's like needing each other so much as well. Yeah, it's really nice. I really love that feeling. Yeah. So that's very exciting. Anyway, should we get into like some world building stuff? Are you ready?
Let's do it. Let's get into some world building.
You know, the building of worlds is in fact what we usually talk about here. Shouldn't we be good at this by now? I don't know.
What episode are we on? 76?
Let's not say it. You know, let's just dive in. Let's forget how many times we've already done this.
Okay.
Let me pitch this to you. Let's just get into this. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is something that's a little bit complex, I think, but that's why it's interesting to me. We've had, as we tried to skip over just now, many episodes before this. Some are very literal, right? Like we just talk about a genre or about like one kind of character or like a trope or just like one kind of world building system. And others are more like meta, where we talk about like how to integrate things or our experience as game players or game runners or writers or storytellers. Mm-hmm. But this one is a little bit, I think, a little bit in between that, because it connects to a lot of things that we sometimes discussed already little bit and sometimes not. Yeah, so I'm just gonna sort of share my train of thought here, if that's okay. As we say in our intro, we talk about world building, we talk about storytelling. Those are the two sort of big pillars here, right?
Right.
But sometimes the question of whether both of them are present or are needed for engagement is very interesting. And what I mean by that is basically the question of when is the world building the story? And when do you basically only need the world to have a story? There are many examples, I think, where the world building is so heavy that you basically, you know, so developed, I guess, or so center stage that you barely need any characters. You barely need a plot line. You just need to sort of feel out the world and explore it, right?
Sure.
This is a very like video game mechanic, of course, where you sort of place yourself in the character and just sort of run around and figure out what's out there. But there's also other, I guess, versions of it. For instance, this is very cool. I just came across a side of YouTube that has not been recommended to me before, which I can't believe.
Ooh, always exciting.
I didn't see. Yeah. It's this user, I guess, channel called Monster Garden. And Monster Garden is basically a giant, like enormous multiple year world building project. And every video is a sort of design of a new part of the world. And it's like, today we're going to discuss the magic system of the world, and we're just going to sort of feel it out and illustrate it or talk about it as you see me illustrating this thing. It's very cool. And it's basically only world building. It's basically the hobby of world building sort of put out there in front of you. And that's it, which sounds very like, you know, worse than I want it to sound like, because it's very cool, of course, but there's not really like, you know, it's not a storyline, it's not a plot, or it's not, there's no like story beats or something there. It's just the world being developed in front of you as the audience, right? And I think depending on the story, I think it's very relevant and interesting to think about, when do you need characters or other things outside of the world itself to tell the story? And when can it be enough to just have the world, basically? Yeah. So I think that's a very complex and interesting question that links to a lot of things, right? But yeah, let's talk about it. Let's discuss it today.
Yeah. I like how you mentioned that this is something very much pertaining to video games, because for some people and for some games, the appeal is just the infinite world. It's just exploring as right. far as you can and seeing where that goes. I kind of finding your own adventure within the setting. There's nothing explicitly detailed to you to accomplish. It's just for you to explore and experience wonder, so to speak. I think a recent example, I wouldn't call it recent, I guess, but No Man's Sky, I think, is a game that came out that is explicitly like almost infinite amounts of planets and within solar systems, and you could just travel forever and find a planet nobody's seen before.
Is this the one where you are basically like playing an astronaut and it's very like gradient-y and stuff?
Yeah, there's a lot of like bright colors in the visuals
and
stuff
like
that.
Yeah, it looks super pretty. I think I saw it come by every now and then, yeah.
I think it released kind of roughshod, but over the years it's improved through patches, and now it's like a legitimate game that everybody kind of views as this great experiment of how far can the world extend.
Nice.
On a much simpler, baser level, there's Minecraft, right? Minecraft,
yeah.
I don't believe, had a story until...
Also good point.
Until a few years ago. It's very much expansive world, randomly generated, so you know that there's no thought behind it in terms of what it means to a story. You come across something and you attribute your own value to it, or you'd simply spend your time building a place of your own. And again, that's purely world building. The story comes with the people you experience that space with, or the story you write yourself. But the game itself didn't originally come prepackaged with this thing that says, hey, everybody must experience the game in this way, with these characters, with these names, with these places. It was more like, here's a sandbox, go play in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
The sandbox games.
Famous
is what
term.
That's...
Yeah, it's basically that. Yeah.
And it's one of the appeals of a lot of RPG games out there, that there's just story to discover and the order you do it in is entirely subjective. Yeah, I like this conversation that we always talk about how world building and storytelling are intrinsically linked, when both of them can succeed rather well without the other in specific contexts and specific genres. Which is nice.
Yeah, totally. I think that's a perfect start for this. And also immediately makes me think of the two, well, let's call them extremes, right? Where we only have world versus we only have, or we don't have world at all. And we're just building story based on, you know, dialogue or characters existing or something. The two things that I kind of was thinking about in this is, well, basically the YouTube example is kind of the world building example, right? But also there's this game called Equilinox, I think, if I pronounce that correctly, which is an example of a game that's very like, you're basically building an ecosystem. So you're sort of the manager of an ecosystem that starts to flourish depending on how well you sort of interact or how well you keep the balance in the system, which is interesting because you're not like, what are you managing really, right? Like there's not really one person. There's not like, there's no hook to this. It's just a sort of system that you're sort of having in front of you. And that's similar to world building, right? You're creating that system, the sort of foundation for anything else to happen. But if the foundation is what is happening, in this case, the game of like making an ecosystem, apparently that's engaging enough to have a game out of it, right?
Yeah.
And the other side of this is, for instance, I was thinking about like the movie 12 Angry Men. I think we've discussed it a little bit early. It's a movie a little bit older, but super great. And it's basically in the American sort of, you know, trial system where you have judges that have to discuss their verdict. This movie is basically the discussion of a bunch of
the
fictional
jury.
Judges. Yeah, the jury. Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm calling it wrong. Of the jury that has to decide what their verdict is. And the whole movie is sort of the argument or the sort of very complex discussion of did he not do it? You're only seeing like this room where the jury's in, and that's it. There's no, you know, the only sort of interesting thing about this movie is the characters and the argument and their opinions about the argument, right? Or their stance in it.
Right, right.
And how sort of humans connect or communicate with each other, I guess is the word. And they're very different ways of making a story, but both are engaging. And why is that, right? Like, why can you both hyper-focus on either the world or sort of anything but the world and create something engaging? Like, is there a link to there, or how far can you go before it doesn't work anymore, right? Like, the balance is quite tight, I guess, because very often when you're sort of looking into or being active in the hobby of world building or like game design or stories like we are, very often the sort of... how do I call this? The golden standard is, you know, having characters, having an engaging world, having basically everything there, as much as possible there that you have developed. But sometimes you don't need as much as possible because the hyper focus is more interesting than just having everything there. Yeah.
Yeah. I find that I could delineate world building from storytelling in that there are some games that are 99% world building and 1% story. Mm. But I guess that's just how I define story as something almost predetermined in terms of structure.
What does that mean? Yeah.
As in, like, say I'm playing, like, we could use Minecraft as an example. Say, sure. I'm playing Minecraft, right? And constructing a house and messing with the land nearby and maybe finding some animals or making a fire or, you know, very, very basic, very, very basic stuff. When do I accept that story is playing a role in what I'm playing? When does that happen? Like, what do I acknowledge as story? Is it when the game itself tells me there's something to do outside of my control? Is it when I start meeting somebody and that person starts interacting with what I've built? Is that when story starts?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So can I play Minecraft entirely devoid of story, or is story something that inevitably happens after you reach a certain point? With that said, I tried to look at it from the other side, maybe story without world building, and I find that it's almost impossible to separate. I find that after a certain point, to add depth to the story, to add weight to things, you have to flesh out the histories of the character, or at least the world around them, to find out the motivations behind the words that they say and the things that they do. There's a depth that comes out of world building. And it's so strange how, like, I think in this thought experiment, story for me is a very simple word. It's a very defined thing, but world building is almost everything else, right? It's,
yes,
it's like the cup that holds the water, you know. Mm-hmm. That's how I'm seeing it. So, like,
yeah, it's the connective tissue.
How much of a refreshing drink can you have without a container to hold it in? Mm-hmm. You know, is what I'm having trouble reconciling. They're not exactly equal, is what I'm getting to right now. That, like, world building without story, pretty possible. Story without world building, not as much so. And that just might be how I'm viewing the whole dynamic between them.
Mm, right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, I think. And also, I guess, sort of ties into the question of, which we probably shouldn't get into all the way because it's in a whole other sort of forest we're digging in. But the question of, like, what do we consider world building and what do we consider not world building? And what do we consider characters and what do we consider not characters?
Big question.
Right? Yeah, big question. I know. It's funny, actually, I had this conversation like a while ago with a colleague of mine where we're talking about, like, how much agency can something that's not a human get in our society as a, you know, society based on humans, right? It's the example of, and I think maybe I've mentioned this before, for instance, that in, I think, Brazil or something, totally correct me if I'm wrong, I have no idea if I remember this right, but somewhere, I think in Latin America, one country or more countries have started to sort of legally give rights to certain natural things, such as a river.
Right, right. We did talk about
stuff like
this.
That. Yeah. And then you're like, okay, so if a river deserves rights in a human society, which I think it does, it's a very interesting question, because then can we care for a river? Can we care for, you know, that a river once was very small and now it's very big? In a way, that's sort of a character, because we start to feel sad, or we start to feel happy, or we start to feel connected to it in a way, right? Like, it's also very much a question of connection and sort of, how much do we need a literal human or a literal sort of human-ish thing to be able to connect with either a world or, you know, a character and stuff like that?
Like, personifying it.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. Because very often, for instance, if we're talking about video games, you know, like, or, you know, anything really, like, I'm thinking like Zelda, right? Or Samurai Jack, where the main character is basically barely there. And it's just a sort of vessel to place yourself into, or like Minecraft, like anything, where the main character is not really meant to be a character. Like, it doesn't need to have a backstory. You just need to play through it. You just need to have their hands, you know, you're the puppet master kind of, right?
Yeah.
But do we need that character? Like, in, you know, Equilinox, the ecosystem game, we don't have a main character that roams around. We just have the world. And is that enough, you know? Or do we need to sort of create this story around it that we are the god of this world and that we are building the world or something, right? Is it necessary? It's an interesting thing.
But when I'm thinking about that sort of game, isn't it true that with time comes story? Like, as you build out your world and as you have these animals walking around, don't you have some sort of lingering attachment to the animals that you've sheltered? Like, when does that become a story?
I'm pretty sure, yeah, for sure. Because you're like, oh my God, I started with this one little duck and now there's 10. Oh my God, I love them.
Like this one has black spots and this one has white spots and I'm going to make sure they live the whole time. Like, when does that become story? What is the, how long can you go without, oh, I guess this is a good question we could ask. Like, does investment imply story? If you're very much attached to something,
it is a good question.
Yeah. And you're following its quote unquote a journey throughout mm-hmm. whatever you're experiencing, is that not story?
I mean, yes. I think the famous OG way of storytelling is kind of the hero's journey, right? Where you have one hero, whatever form that might take, and it is on a journey, and that's all we need mm-hmm. to be able to storytell, right? The very classic example, of course. There's many other sort of versions of it by now. But yeah, I think that's a very interesting and relevant question. Like, do we need the journey? Is that maybe what brings story into anything? And does a hero need to do it? Or do we just need a general journey? Is a journey on itself enough? Like, just seeing a world evolve, is that enough, right? Yeah, it's very complex.
I can't remember if it was this season or last. One of my favorite discussions was about investment. Mm. Like, how much does being involved in the progress and the success of the characters in your story push the story along? Like,
right.
Is the story contingent on progress or development? And I think for stories, I guess by definition, I'm starting to lose the definition of story after talking about it for so long.
That's the interesting part.
It's the story is the development of events. It's things happening. It's successively mm-hmm. With meaning, I suppose. Is story meaning in world building?
Like, whoa, dude.
Like this. Whoa. Well, my sick brain is
mind
is
blown.
It's bringing me places.
Yeah,
today.
We're like hallucinating at this point, which is okay in this kind of topic. Like, I don't hate it.
When you attribute meaning or value to things in world building, and those things develop over time, is that not story?
I would say so. Yeah.
How attached do you have to be to your cow in Minecraft for it to be story? Okay.
Once you give it a name, story
that's
evolves.
Story.
You know,
that's yeah. story.
Yeah, yeah. It's a hard line. You know, it's an easy question. Yeah, I don't know why we took so long.
What a fun topic. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of like links to this, right? Like, we have to be careful to not like stray off the path here, because it's can go as big as we want. Yeah.
It's a long time coming to discuss the definition of world building and storytelling and the connection between the two.
I can't believe we also didn't do it like as literal as this, I think, before. I mean, at least I can't remember, but also my brain's fogged. So, you know, maybe don't trust my judgment here.
I think their first episodes had like pirates in it and like fire.
Yeah, that's all I remember as well. Pirates today.
You know, this far into our podcast, I can't forget the episode that was just pirates and fire. True, yeah. Just indulgent topics.
Honestly, you know, at some point we gotta evolve too. We're like leveling up here, I feel like. Mm. Also, like, there's not a lot of genres and tropes left that at least I can still think of. So it's gotta get like philosophical and confusing at this point.
We gotta dig
here
a little deeper into our bag.
Yeah.
This far into the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any other points you wanted to bring up before we pop over?
No,
to our
I guess this was very much like kind of where I wanted to go. Also, maybe let's finish off with the last sort of interesting, like funky thing that I remembered when you were talking about like where does story begin? Like, do you name your cow and then does that mean the story begins?
Is that story? Is that the start?
Yeah, there's like one game that I really, really enjoy, and it's not even like that good, but somehow I'm just really enjoying it. Like, I don't
know.
It's called Meadow. And it's a very like polygon sort of open world online game. So you can just sort of come to the server and you see people running around. Basically, you're playing little animals and you're in this world and you can't talk at all. There's no chat except for like emoticons, and they're all very wholesome and cute. So you can't help but be wholesome in this world. And also, like, if you work together with other players, if you like, this feels very strange, but if you bark at a rock, at a specific rock long enough with more than one people, you get sort of little gems that you can collect, and it's really nice. So you have to, basically the mechanic is you have to run around with a bunch of strangers and then like bark excitedly when you find a rock, and then you get presents. That's the whole mechanic, and the world's beautiful. It's kind of this polygon sort of abstracty like foresty area. It's very nice.
Cool.
But the thing that I really liked, I came upon this game because I was looking into like a gameplay of this, and I think this was by Stacy Plays. I don't really know what else she does, but she's a YouTuber and she had a great gameplay of Meadow. And she played it with like a friend of her that was also on the same server. And they were sort of trying to find each other because you can't chat. You don't really know where you are. The world is kind of confusing if you haven't like run around in it for a long time as well. So the whole first half of this gameplay was them trying to basically find each other. And they were also like video calling because it was a gameplay. So they were chatting as well. And they were so extremely happy when they found each other that I just got so involved in like the search of like this little abstract badger and this little abstract like bunny or whatever she was playing that were like roaming around this world like for like an hour trying to figure out where each other were like without understanding anything
that
about the
story
world.
It's that story.
Yeah, and that's why I got so excited. And then I downloaded Meadow and I run around in Meadow and it was great. So, you know, I think your argument really rings true here, and I think that's a good place to end end that conversation.
Sure,
yeah
I like that. Good topic.
Yeah. Such places to go with this one, right? Yeah, I feel like we can linger on this for more episodes even, but, you know, we'll see.
I'm sure.
Where we end up. This counts for a lot of topics as well, you know. That's
yeah,
okay.
This won't be the last time we talk about world building and storytelling. It seems
that
a little bit
is
on the
true.
Nose.
Yeah, it's kind of obvious by this point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, as we round off the conversation part of this, we famously, every episode.
Famously.
I think by now we are a little bit famous, you know. Can we just like put that in the universe?
That is true.
Famously, at the end of the episode, we usually do a little prompt. So in this case, since I'm hosting, I'm giving you, Dante, a little prompt based on whatever we're talking about. Or, you know, something entirely different. But today it is linked because, you know, it's such an abstract topic. How can it not be linked?
I'm ready.
Okay. So for this prompt, I would love for you to create a little scene, can be as big or as small as you want, can be, you know, just a little situation or a little a journey or a location or something.
Okay.
A little scene where there are no human characters at all involved.
Hmm.
Interpret that however you want, but I'm curious where you might go.
No human characters. I'm going to do my utmost to avoid like an Animal Farm situation.
Yeah, like let's try to get as far away from it as possible if you can.
Yeah.
Let's see how sort of weird and abstract we can go.
Oh, okay. We're talking abstract.
Whatever you're feeling.
The tricky thing about this prompt is
it is quite tricky, I think. Yeah.
The primal urge to personify everything.
Yes, that's the challenge
here.
Which is
give it like human attributes.
What if it has eyes?
Yeah, something simple.
Yeah,
I'm very good at simple things.
Yeah. I feel like this is fine. We are stepping into a warm Thursday afternoon. You can feel the sun pressing from the skies through the window panes, golden streaks of light landing on the not perfectly shimmering, but not dirty tiles of the kitchen floor. They say that a house is constantly in motion. Through the morning and the night, there are the creakings of the floorboards expanding and contracting to the heat. There are the ever imperceptible shifts in the objects moved by wind or gravity or the sudden pressures of moving individuals. It's hard to imagine that a house so static to the human eye can always be a place for activity. A small clock with a swinging pendulum rests on the wall to the side of this kitchen, peering over its wooden compatriots adorning this space. And the room, quietly, imperceptibly, welcomes life. The small skittering of a mouse's footsteps on the hard wooden tile. In the quiet of the house, with its usual inhabitants out for work or play, the mouse welcomes the curiosity and wonders of the space usually occupied. It skitters up the legs of the chair, leaving small markings along the wood frame, forever changed by its presence. And the chair is thankful, adding character to its age. The mouse hops onto the counter of this old, varnished wooden table, stained by the countless numbers of dinners, the heat of the plate pressing through the wood and leaving a ring. The mouse doesn't care for that, but acknowledges it all the same. Instead, it hurries to the center of the table, a plate holding a sweet meal. It'd be a bit passe to say a plate of cheese, so I'll try not to do that in this moment. But some sort of adjacent dairy cake is available in the center.
Great.
And the mouse spends a while discovering a new meal chipping away at the sides of some birthday celebration long forgotten in the past few days. A cake too old for anybody else to enjoy experiencing. The mouse revels. And the furniture of the room, almost collectively, gathers a deep sigh. Finally, for the first time in a long time, in the presence of an individual not in a hurry. And that's where I'll end the story.
Yes.
There you go.
Oh, that was so great. Oh, I loved it. You know what I think was the best part of that? That in all the sentences, that sort of the furniture and the plate and, you know, all that stuff was always sort of main subject of the sentence. Like, even in the way you talked about it, it was great. It's so nice. It's a very humble one, right? Like a humble, humble prompt fulfillment here. It's great.
I think I wanted to play around with the idea of agency. That furniture in and of itself is not an agent character. They cannot act on what they see or what they witness. So they're just observers to life.
Yeah, that's the right word for it. Like it was very observing, like very calming in that sense. Yeah, very nice. Because it's hard to sort of feel engaged with something that's rather passive in a way, right? Like that's kind of the point you were making there. Yeah. Ah, well done. This is great.
Charming little
story. So charming. Yeah, very comfy.
Okay.
Good comfy prompt. Thank you so much for that. That was great. I think that brings us to the end of our podcast. Unfortunately.
It does.
It goes so fast, doesn't it? Oh, well.
Oh, well.
How do we end this with? I forgot. I'm going to say it.
All right.
Oh, well, bye.
Guys.
No. Let's not do that. We got stuff for this. If you want to reach out to us, as always, we have a Gmail. Feel free to email us at yourriversarewrong@gmail.com. We will always check it and love for you to totally bother us with weird ideas or normal ideas or, you know, not bother us, but be friendly. Both are welcome. We also have Twitter. We might check it. Go find us.
Maybe.
Maybe, you know.
Possibly.
It's continuously a confusing platform that we apparently also are on. It's great. Anyway, love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening. And as always, there's this one thing that we just want to put out there in case you forgot that this is very real.
In case you forgot.
Yeah, in case you forgot the title of our podcast, which is that your rivers are wrong. Yeah.
They are wrong.
Sorry about it.
Still wrong.
Yeah.
Will be wrong.
Maybe
wrong.
You should get that looked at. Yeah.
Anyway. That checked out.
Yeah, maybe go check it out. Anyway, thank you so much, guys.
Goodbye.
See you in the next one. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Your Rivers Are Wrong. If you have any thoughts for topics, prompts, or if you just want to share your thoughts, you can reach us at yourriversarewrong@gmail.com. That's yourriversarewrong@gmail.com. Big thank you goes to Martin Skelligans for our intro and outro music. And most importantly, thank you for listening. We hope to catch you at our next episode. Have a good one.